This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. Robbie Faulks is a gifted singer-songwriter whose music crosses many boundaries. His roots are in bluegrass, but he's written and recorded well-received alternative rock and country material. He's even recorded an album's worth of Michael Jackson songs, but the project was shelved after Jackson was arrested on the child abuse charges he was later acquitted of. Robbie Faulks grew up near Raleigh, North Carolina, and played banjo as a teenager, but he spent most of his musical career in Chicago. He recorded his first solo album, Country Love Songs, in 1996, and has since released six more, including his latest, Georgia Hard. Mary Houlihan of the Chicago Sun-Times wrote that on Georgia Hard, Faulks' music harkens back to the days before Nashville was overtaken by the slickness of modern hat acts. His clean vocals, memorable melodies, and satiric lyrics recall the styles of Shel Silverstein, Johnny Paycheck, and Roger Miller. Georgia Hard was recorded in Nashville, where Robbie Faulks worked for a few years as a staff writer for a songwriting company. Here's his song, Each Night I Try.
Well, it's bad enough the way I feel when I'm not stoned. But since you've gone, I can't leave bad enough alone. And these heartaches aren't too
That's Each Night I Try from Robbie Faulks' new CD, Georgia Hard. Terry spoke to Robbie Faulks in 1998 after the release of his album, Let's Kill Saturday Night. Faulks brought his guitar with him to the studio.
I'd love for you to do a song for us. Let me suggest a song called I Can't Win for Losing You. Would you say something about the song before you sing it for us?
Yeah, there's a... It's not an earth-shaking song. And the lyrics are real, like I said, simple and universal. It kind of reminds me of a Roger Miller kind of 60s groove. It's a shuffle, and it's one of those things. Another thing that country specializes in, I guess, is sad songs set to happy, up-tempo grooves.
There you go again. Take you back and then you break my heart again. It seems I just can't win for losing you. We tried a thousand times to keep this love alive, but your fickle heart just can't be true. I just can't win for losing you. Well, a man's a fool that makes the same mistake time after time and feels each heartache like it was brand new. Yes, I'd be rich if broken dreams were diamonds, but I just can't win for losing you. Oh, there
take you back and then you break my heart again. It seems that I just can't win for losing you. Well, it seems that I just can't win for losing you.
That's a really good song. I really like that a lot. That's Robbie Foulkes. Robbie, you lived in Nashville for a few years, and you were actually working for one of those song publishing companies, writing a lot of songs for the company, being like a staff songwriter. That must have been a really interesting experience. What made you decide to go down to Nashville and try out that life and that approach in the music business?
Well, you know, Nashville was there, and so I decided to take a stab at it. I had a friend that worked down there as a staff songwriter. I never did live down there, actually, but I've been up in Chicago for the last 15 years, and I've got a family up here and stuff, so I couldn't quite take the plunge and totally relocate. But I thought I'd get my foot in the door, and I was so encouraged by my first trip or two down there that... you know, I got a writer deal in fairly fast order and got set up with a performance rights organization, and away we went. And that's where I just kind of hit the brick wall after that. But it did let me spend 3 years kind of honing my craft and as a part-time job. It let me spend several hours every day just sitting in my room and writing songs, and that was just invaluable to me.
What's the deal like working with a publishing company?
Well, you sort of have an editor to help you give you feedback, and somebody at the publisher will say, well, this line at a good publisher that is will say this line doesn't exactly feed out of this line before it, and this hook isn't quite strong enough, or you know, this song, go back and rewrite this from a female point of view and make it a little softer and take out that mention where you say that the singer is 5'2" because we want somebody taller to be able to sing it too. So I'd get all sorts of comments like that, and sometimes I'd pay attention to them and sometimes I wouldn't. And then they'll go out and record and try to pitch them to Garth Brooks or whoever. Try and make $1 million.
So I could see how the artiste in you would feel offended that somebody was editing your songs. On the other hand, it must have been really helpful craft-wise to have somebody critiquing every song like that.
Yeah, well, I kind of knew what I was getting into, I guess, when I took the job. And to me, it was, spend some time writing for this market, or, you know, as best I can. And that kind of work is sort of more like crossword puzzle work. And then I'll spend the rest of the time just writing whatever I feel like. And that's how I got, for instance, a lot of the songs off of the Let's Kill Saturday Night record was that other half of the time that was just for me.
What about I Can't Win for Losing You, which you just played? Which was that?
That was more or less a Nashville pitch, actually, because I co-wrote it with a songwriter down there, and they demoed it in pretty quick order. They liked that one a lot, but in general, people down there aren't looking for something that old-fashioned sounding to sing, and, you know, the shuffle quality and the little yodel quality and all the rest of that is so old hat and outmoded to them that didn't really trip any triggers down there.
So what's in if that's out?
What's in is kind of soft rock. My friend John Langford says that country music today is just kind of like suburban light rock music, and that's pretty much it to me. It's got to be... It helps if it's kind of feminized and socially aware and doesn't offend anybody.
Do you want to do a few bars of what you think of as the prototypical song that you've just described?
Well, no, I don't want to offend any other songwriters, but I got plenty that I wrote like that. Here's a chorus of something I wrote. Look how close we came when we hardly had a prayer and only seconds left to spare. Then the hand of fate came and pulled us from the flame. I can't imagine losing everything, but look how close we came. That kind of thing, you know. That's, to me, that was a Tim McGraw kind of a pitch, and I'm singing it, kind of making fun of it as I'm singing it. But It's a song about a guy that almost lost his wife, and then they almost lost their kid, and blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think whenever the hand of fate makes an appearance, it's always a bad sign.
Very bad sign.
So how did you feel when you wrote in a hand of fate line?
I thought it was great. A hand of fate pulled him from the flame. I thought, well, this is just cliched enough to send out to middle America and see what happens.
Now, who decides on the fate of a song? You write it, you send it to the publishing company, and then what happens?
And then it's just out in the free marketplace down in Nashville for various A&R people and producers and artists to listen to and decide if they want to do it.
Well, how do they shop for songs, or how are songs shopped to them?
I don't know. I've never done it. I don't really know, except it's just kind of an insular network down there where they'll have meetings. And, well, an artist, for instance, there's a thing called Rofax down there, which is a facsimile that is sent out every week and that has lists of so-and-so, Brooks and Dunn are looking for an up-tempo tune a la Marie or whatever their last hit was. And so-and-so is looking for a hot ballad. And most of them just say, so-and-so is looking for a gigantic hit.
So basically, you'd sit home and hope that the hand of fate would point one of your songs out to
pull me from the flame of penury. Uh-huh.
Did you give yourself different assignments so, you know, that you'd have different kinds of singers to work for? Like, well, today I'll try the ballad. Next week I'll try the up-tempo for a middle-aged singer-songwriter, for a middle-aged woman singer or something?
Yeah, definitely. Set yourself little tasks like that. And, you know, at some point it just gets so un-you and so inauthentic that it just shows through the songwriting. So it's, for me, it was kind of a little difficult to walk that line where I'd use lyrics that were obviously cliched and obviously that I didn't believe while I was writing them, but still try to make it sincere sounding. So maybe it was just inevitably an impossible task from the beginning.
On the other hand, I think there must be something very liberating about writing for a character as opposed to writing confessional autobiographical lyrics and just thinking about, you know, the shapeliness of the song instead of thinking about whether you personally really mean it.
Yeah, or it's like a lot of great writers that got their start writing Pulp Fiction or obituaries or H.L. Mencken doing crime reporting or anything like that. It's just a place to get your tools together, and it is helpful to get outside of your personality and try to adopt other voices, I think.
I'm going to ask you to do another song, and this is from a previous album that was called South Mouth. And the song is called Forgotten But Not Gone. Tell us how you wrote this and if you had anybody or any type of song in mind while doing it.
Yeah, I had sort of a Johnny Paycheck style in mind. Johnny's got a lot of stuff that he did with Aubrey Mayhew on the Little Darlin' label in the late 60s that is just as good as anything ever done in country music. This is, of course, well before the Take This Job and Shove It period, which got a little bit more cartoonish. But like a lot of stuff you write, you start with an idea, it kind of gets away from that, so the end product doesn't really sound much like him, but it still has some of the chord changes that I liked about some of that stuff. This old house turned cold when he walked in. Oh, and I felt myself fading as you smiled at him. Now lately I'm just barely hanging on. A shadow of the man you loved, forgotten but not gone. Forgotten like a fool the time passed by. But the day that I let go, I know I'll die. Unwanted man, a ghost in my own home.
That's how it feels to be forgotten, but not gone. Every night, these two arms reach out for you. Oh, but you just can't feel their touch the way you used to. I guess no heart can hold two loves for too long. One staked his claim, now one remains forgotten, but not gone. Forgotten, like a fool, the time passed by. Now I see my whole life passing in your eyes. And the epitaph carved in your heart of stone, here lies a true love, forgotten, but not gone.
That's Robbie Foulkes performing a song that he wrote called Forgotten But Not Gone. So what was the fate of that song after you wrote it?
Nothing happened to that one. You mean as far as the Nashville network?
Yeah, that's one of the ones you submitted, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I'd write four or five a month and send them all down and just see what happened. Nothing happened to that one, so I went and recorded it. And, you know, as I started doing my own records, I started getting the suspicion that anything that didn't really excite them down there might be a worthy song, so that I should consider it one that I might record myself.
Did you feel like you had to have a certain number of hooks per song, or you know, like what advice did they give you on hooks?
I think my publisher and I both thought that I was pretty hook oriented to begin with, so I don't think I ever got the response, go back this and make it more memorable sounding, or you know, center it all on the hook. I had that part of the craft pretty well down. I think most of the advice that I got was what I was saying. Just take some of the hard edges off. Nobody's ever gonna sing a line like "Oh, I feel like a dog," or anything that's un-up with people, or bluesy. Nobody's gonna get that near. There's a wash of positive Oprah Winfrey-style feeling down in Nashville nowadays, apparently.
Can you play a few bars of something that got the most negative reaction that you like?
Sure. Early on, I found out about the great, the great woman problem, which is that stuff that you write for that market has to fit into what they think a woman would want to sing or want to hear, and that automatically disqualified about 90% of my catalog. But they would say, go back and write something that's more friendly to women. So just to be sort of ornery, I went back home one time and wrote a song called, I got one here that I really think you'll like, and they said, what's the name? I said, Hating Women is the name of it. And, uh, the, the chorus kind of went, hating women. It's kind of a rockabilly thing. Hating women. Yeah, loathe them like the Dickens, but you won't get far hating women. All right. And then it had a verse about Ernest Hemingway and a verse about pornographers and a verse about shopping. And it was just calculated for them not to like it. Oh, it's a pretty good song, too.
Inspired a little bit by Rockin' Robin, maybe?
Exactly.
Yeah. There's another song that I imagine didn't endear you to the Nashville community, though I don't know if they ever got to hear it. I'm thinking of a song that's on your new CD called God Isn't Real. Did you send that one down to Nashville?
Yeah, that's one of the ones that you sent in, or I sent it in, partly because it's so fun to watch the... we had a Christian receptionist down there at the place where I worked, and one of her jobs was to write up all the titles in her... in the database, and there were some titles of mine that she just wouldn't write, and it was always fun to try and make up some of these titles that wouldn't just stop her fingers on the keyboard.
Right. Is that why you wrote this song?
That was one of the... That's not why I wrote the song, but that was definitely the most fun thing about submitting that. And also another song of mine, F This Town, which was another one that stopped her fingers from typing.
It's like a Nashville anti-anthem. Play us a chorus of God Isn't Real, but before you do, tell us what inspired the song.
Well, this song is an atheist song, and it basically represents my point of view, or a slightly radicalized or caricatured version of my point of view about the problem of evil and the implausibility of divine intelligence in the world. And the first chorus, for instance, goes, go ask the starving millions under Stalin's cruel reign. Go ask the child with cancer who eases her pain. Then go to your churches if that's how you feel. But don't ask me to follow, for God isn't real. That's the first chorus of that.
So, what reactions did you get to it?
That is another one that kind of went into a black hole as far as they were concerned, but sort of an interesting reaction playing that. That's on my new record, and so I play it, you know, all the time now when I go out. And there's often a contingent of people that either refuse to clap, very ostentatiously refuse to clap for that one, or stare angrily, or on occasion just leave the concert at that point. That's happened in a couple cities so far, Atlanta, Oklahoma City, and a couple other places. So we always kind of look forward to pulling it out and just seeing what'll happen.
Does it ever bother you that by singing that God isn't real, you're not only expressing your opinions as an atheist, but you're saying that the God other people believe in isn't real, and that you really might be offending them or challenging them in some way?
No, I don't think so, because I think the free exchange of ideas is a fine and American tradition that that I'd like to uphold. And I was on the same topic. I was doing an interview with a right-wing paper. The interviewer was Christian, and this is just the other week. And he said, well, I appreciate your putting it out on the table like that, because so much of the atheism that you hear in modern pop culture is just sort of a hidden and watered-down presupposition in music or in movies or in TV shows, and it's seldom stated so bluntly. And so better not to beat around the bush and just lay your cards out, I think.
So what reaction did you get at your publishing company when you sent the song down? You didn't really expect somebody was going to do it, right?
No, I really expected Alan Jackson might take a stab at God Isn't Real. I'm just that naive. No, I didn't hear anything, and I didn't expect to.
You have a song called Blank This Town, Epithet This Town, which is a song about Nashville. You want to do just a couple of bars of that? And you could say blank this town instead of the word that you really use? Or,
sure.
Or another substitute if you prefer?
Hey, this ain't country western, it's just soft rock feminist crap. And I thought they'd struck bottom back in the days of Ronnie Millsap. Now they can't stop the flood of beep. there ain't a big enough ass cap. Sure, I like old Tim Carroll and BR549, but Nashville don't need that noise. No, Nashville'll do just fine. As long as there's a moron market and a beep. I don't know how much I can say of this. So beep.
What gives you an idea? Yeah, no, I'm wondering, did the people who you were working with hear that song, and did they take it personally? Like, well, when are you this guy a break if that's the way he feels about the city and the music coming out of it?
Probably that didn't help my cause too much.
Yeah, probably. Were you in a moment of particular frustration when you wrote that?
I was having a really good time when I wrote that, but... I mean, I have to say, as far as all of this relates to, like, sending stuff in and what their reactions were to it, I just kind of, after the first year of my 3-year deal, I stopped even thinking about it anymore and just started writing for my own pleasure because so little was happening that I kind of gave up on it. So that song was written shortly after I gave up on it, and it was great to vent spleen and just to have total fun writing a song and to say whatever you wanted to say.
When we have singer-songwriters on the show, I'd like to ask them at the end to redeem a song. Someone ask you if you can think of a song that a lot of us might find uninteresting or square and that you think is a really swell song that you'd like to play for us and redeem. When you think of a song, would you introduce it for us?
Yeah, let me think a second. This is called Dancing Queen by ABBA.
Friday night and the lights are low. Looking out for a place to go, where they play the right music. Getting in the swing, you're going to meet the king. Anybody could be that guy. Lights are low and the music's high. Where they play the right music, keep them in the swing, you're in the mood for a dance. And when you get the chance, you are the dancing queen, young and sweet, only
am very impressed. I mean, you not only did it, you did the whole song. You had it all worked out. Do you do this in your shows?
No, haven't done that one. We did it, maybe 3 years ago for two or three times, and then it kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Now, what do you love about the song? Why did you choose that to redeem?
I like that one because it's so much about melody and chords, and, you know, the words are so obviously just kind of wretched words written by people that don't speak English that well. But to me, it underscores the idea that that the words are less important than everything else a lot of the time, just general vibe, groove, melody, chorus. And I don't know, any time that there's like a sexy 17-year-old character in it, it's ipso facto interesting, I think.
Well, it's been great to have you on the show, Robbie Faulks. A real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Singer-songwriter Robbie Faulks speaking with Terry Gross in 1998. His new CD is called Georgia Hard.